May is National Preservation Month. Each year, local realtors, rehabbers, and gadflies look up from their sanding belts and mortar slurry to take a breath and rally around those historic places that have been saved and those that are threatened. If you value the look, feel, and function of a 1930s bungalow over a subdivision of tract houses, the Missouri Alliance for Historic Preservation is in your service. With offices in the restored 1912 Katy Depot in Boonville, a trio of Missouri Preservation staff recently discussed what the group does, why they do what they do, and a shared recent preservation success story from Glasgow that needed a village to save a church.
I always say history is a story of what's happened, and the sort of physical property that accompanies history I consider the illustrations. So they're kind of the tangible part of history that we can see every day. Historic places are tied inextricably to our memory of things and places, and we are in the business of helping people save and preserve those places that have meaning to Missouri citizens.
That's the director of Missouri Preservation, Bill Hart. During a recent visit at his organization's offices in Boonville, Hart discussed a range of community benefits to preserving historic buildings.
It saves historic resources. It saves building materials from going into a landfill. If you want to consider it, the greenest building, if it were, is the one that's already there. It doesn't require all new building materials. It doesn't waste what's there. It preserves what's there.
Besides being green, preservation may be the wave of the future. Again, here's Missouri Preservation's Bill Hart and talking about how young people are choosing preserve spaces over sprawl.
A lot of millennials aren't even getting driver's licenses. I mean, there's a considerable drop in the number of people coming of age who actually take a driver's test. Millennials are more interested in taking public public transit if they need to go someplace long haul, but even more interested in living, working, playing, shopping in one place, which is, we need to really rethink zoning, because I think neighborhoods and businesses function better when they were together, when people lived, worked, played, shopped in the same neighborhood. And I think that's what people are looking for again.
Millennial and Missouri Preservation Administrator Katie Graby agrees.
It's safer and it's easier to have public transportation. You can save money with it. And it's also just nice. When I lived in Savannah, I either walked everywhere or biked everywhere. And it's easier just to hop on a trolley or hop on a bus or hop on the metro to get where you're going. I was just thinking earlier when you were talking about, buildings and millennials and just saving it and living in your little town or your little downtown, it helps to keep your historic buildings because it provides that sense of place rather than having an empty lot or a parking lot or, a one-story strip mall next to your two-story, 19th century building. It doesn't make sense.
There are numerous reasons why someone might be moved to save a historic building. Most of them inevitably involve economics, with an owner or investor asking, can this property be restored and then generate enough revenue through rent to justify the cost? When the decision is made to save a historic property, it is often an individual, corporation, or a local government that takes the lead. In Glasgow, Missouri, it took a village to save a church. With Missouri Preservation's Bill Hart and Katie Greeby, KBIA's Trevor Harris visited Glasgow's Campbell Chapel AME Church. Built during the Civil War by local black families, the single-story structure anchors one of Glasgow's many rolling hills above the Missouri River. One local champion for the restoration of Campbell Chapel lives with her family in Glasgow and recalled growing up in the church.
My name is Sandra Inyard, Reverend Sandra Inyard. I am not a member here. I used to be a member. My husband has been a member here from birth. He and his twin brother, and of course they're at work. But they still reside here. They have a membership of maybe 5-6 members. The pastor here is Reverend Stephanie Dorsey. She's from Independence, Missouri, and she drives here every Sunday. They fellowship just once a week here at the church.
Were you around for the process when the community... Can you talk about that process?
Absolutely. if you look on the back board, that was Jeff's mother. They have been praying for restoration of this church. And it was, I think, some people from Kansas City, I think, gave an estimate of like $160,000 to restore the church. And then one day, this young man from here, he came by and said he wanted to restore the church for free. He came out to our house and wanted to restore the church for free, and he wanted Tuck Point. And then once he started Tuck Pointing, the community got together, different churches in our community got together and started the painting on the inside. All the painting has been donated, and we worked and painted the windows, and they got a grant from it was Mr. Monig, who passed away and left money and for the city, and some of the grant was from him, from his memorial.
Is the style of this church common in small town Missouri?
I'm not sure of like the African American tradition, but I don't know that there are lots of Greek Revival churches left in Missouri, period. So it is probably pretty much a rarity.
She said she'd take us downstairs.
Thank you so much for allowing us in here today. It's just such a wonderful thing to have this church come back to life.
Yeah, it is. It's a blessing. It's truly a blessing. And it's still a lot to do. But as my husband always says, you know, it's the faith. We have faith that it's going to be completed.
How's this your mother?
That's his mother.
Oh, okay. Oh, your husband's then. Okay.
That's his mother.
I know, I heard you say
yeah.
The same as
and
that.
There's many a days that she and Jean Craig, Edith Jean Craig, would sit here in that window waiting for the ministers, because most of the ministers are coming from Kansas
have
City.
To come, yeah.
Uh-huh. And they would be the only two here waiting for the minister to come. And they would be the only two here at this church a lot of times, you know. And a lot of times the finances was, you know, not very good. And so my husband and his twin brother, they would go and pay the gas bill. They go pay the light bill, or, you know, out of their pocket just to keep the church running, you know. And our desire is to see this church filled, especially in these last days, that we have to have a building for those people, those sinner mans that are out there that needs Christ, you know. So we're going to have this building, and I believe wholeheartedly that it will be filled.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
and it's great. It's great to see that once the neighbors see that there's a rebirth of the building, that there's a rebirth of the congregation, and people come back.
Yes.
And more people came back than were here to begin with.
Exactly.
It
was just amazing how people came together. The man across the street, Mr. Flashpower, one day came over, and I was putting linoleum downstairs, and he said, "I'm going to give you this money," and he gave me $500. You know, I said, "Just do whatever you need to do with it," you know. And
awesome.
Mrs. Fremont, she said, "Whatever it takes to finish what we were trying to accomplish, to finish it, and I'll pay for it." I mean, just people were just so giving. The the Methodist Church, they all came together, took up the carpet, and took up tacks, and took up, you know, just worked hard and painted day and night, just to see this church stand.
That's great.
And it's only standing by the grace of God. Always standing by the grace of God. The chairs are the original chairs, but they were redone by one of the members, Richard Inyard and Karen Inyard. They did that in memory of their daughter who passed away at 12 years old from a sinus infection. So they redid the chairs. The pulpit is original. All of this is original. Chairs are original. The piano is original. And I say everything in here is pretty much original. And back here at the door is Ann E. Moore, which was my husband's great-great-great aunt. And they started 1842 to 1931. It started where is now Stump Island. Here in Glasgow, it started there, and they moved it. They brought it in town.
Older buildings often hold a special place of pride for the community in which they stand. Whether threatened with demolition by neglect or redevelopment, a community's historic properties can't be replaced. When they're gone, that's it. Each year, Missouri Preservation draws attention to a group of these irreplaceable properties located across the Show Me State. Campbell Chapel AME Church in Glasgow was one of the first properties listed on the Properties in Peril list dating to 2001. There is no consensus, of course, about what buildings are deserving of preservation and which are not. While many would see a rural Missouri black church from the 19th century as a significant structure, many might overlook buildings constructed in the 20th century. As Trevor Harris started talking about this show a few months ago, he saw a parallel between the preservation of a 19th century black church and a local demolition. Both buildings grew from an optimism of their time, a feeling that the best of our culture could be captured in a building's construction. MU art history professor Michael Yonan understands the need to save structures like Glasgow's Campbell Chapel. He also advocates for preserving examples of more modern architecture.
This spring, the University of Missouri began the demolition of Jones Residence Hall. I must confess to great sadness at seeing it go, a feeling that does not come from my personal history. Of course, I never lived there. From the time it first opened to its final moments, Jones was an all-female dorm. And my undergraduate education took place at a different institution, the University of Illinois. But I'm an art historian and admirer of mid-century modern architecture, of which Jones Hall is an example, and I have always smiled when walking past it. It is so clearly of its historical moment, the years around 1960. Back then, the U.S. experienced a boom in university attendance due to the GI Bill, a burgeoning prosperity brought about by a solid middle class, and a widespread expectation that America's post-war dominance required an educated citizenry. Universities responded to those demands by building many shiny new structures. Lately, it seemed rather plain, but in its time, Jones was a remarkable statement about Missouri's modernity. You see, the Dobbs Pavilion complex, of which Jones is a part, is based on modernist architectural ideas that developed in the minds of some very forward-looking designers. The clean rectangular forms, the favoring of right angles over curves, the minimization of ornament, the functional arrangement, and the large surfaces of glass are all ideas borrowed from great architects like Le Corbusier, Mies van der Rohe, and Philip Johnson. Those design elements produce a restraint, a practicality, and a modernity that defined the American collective mood at the beginning of the Mad Men era. The Dobbs complex conveyed Missouri's belief that it was part of a sophisticated world, and a contributor to it in a most essential way, through education. But its design was also very much of its place, toned down from East Coast and Chicago avant-garde to something suitable for its locale. Jones was at once progressive and approachable. Not all old buildings are historically significant. Some are just old. Tearing down a building sometimes means very little in the broader arc of a city's history. Jones went through heavy use in its 50-plus years of occupation. It may very well be that it is time for it to go, the casualty of another moment of expansion and growth in the university's history. But I recognize that with it goes some fascinating history and a tangible expression of mid-century confidence. Given America's love of that era, it is ironic that mid-century architecture like Jones is so surprisingly endangered. I hope the building that replaces it keeps alive that historical moment's mood or continues it with an optimism born of our own.
That was MU Professor of Art History, Michael Yonan, talking about the now former modernist architecture of the MU campus that was Jones Hall. The optimism that inspired Jones Hall was not so different from the optimism of black residents of Glasgow, Missouri, almost 150 years ago when they built a modest chapel at the corner of 6th and Commerce Streets. That chapel was a place to keep time, hold community events, and of course, practice the faith. The nonprofit advocacy group Missouri Preservation announces their annual list of threatened historic properties in the state, the Places in Peril program. It's on May 26th. For more details and locations of the 2015 Places in Peril, as well as information about the state of Missouri's Historic Preservation Tax Credit Program, visit preservemo.org, where you can visit them in their offices in Boonville's historic 1912 Katy Depot. University of Missouri Convergence journalism student Shelby Mann co-produced this show with assistance from me, Trevor Harris. For Shelby and the show's producer, Darren Helwich, thanks for listening. You're hearing Sandra Enyard singing at Glasgow's Campbell Chapel AME Church. This is Thinking Out Loud on KBIN. Stay